You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So, hey, did you guys hear about the leader of the ex-gay conversion therapy movement who came out as gay last week and apologized to other gay people for the lies and the harm he'd done? What's that? Oh, no. Not Michael Boosey and Gary Cooper. Those homos co-founded Exodus International in 1976. For decades, Exodus was the world's largest ex-gay ministry. But just 3 years after co-founding it, Boosey and Cooper came out as gay and got married. Well, they got commitment ceremonied, which was the best they could do at the time, and apologized to other gay people for the harm they'd done and the lies that they'd told. What's that? No, I'm not talking about Alan Chambers either. He was the last guy to head up Exodus International, became the president of the organization in 2001, and then shut the thing down in 2013, at which point he apologized to the gay people who'd been harmed by Exodus and admitted that conversion therapy doesn't work. Chambers himself didn't come out as gay, but he did describe himself at the time as not straight. But I wasn't talking about him. And I wasn't talking about John Smid either, who was the former director of Love in Action, another ministry that tried to convert gay people into straight people. Smid came out in 2011, married a dude, moved to Texas. And I'm not talking about John Polk, the founder of Love Won Out, a gay conversion therapy program run by the anti-gay hate group Focus on the Family. He came out as gay, or came out as gay again, in 2013. And I'm not talking about Ben Grisham or Jeremy Marks or Tim Rimmel or Anthony Van Brown or Gunter Baum, all leaders of conversion therapy programs who've come out, admitted their programs were ineffective and harmful, and apologized to the gay community. No, the former ex-gay leader we are talking about this week, the most recent high-profile inductee into the ranks of the ex-gays, also known as the gays, is McCrae Game, the man who founded Hope for Wholeness back in 1999. Conversion therapy is not just a lie, but it's very harmful, Game told the Post and Courier. Maybe Game should have Googled Alan Chambers or Polk or any of the others who came out before him. And Game went on to say, harmful because it is false advertising. False advertising. Not only doesn't conversion therapy work, as the leaders of this crackpot movement are reminded every single time they rub one out, but it does real harm. Vulnerable people, the kind of people these groups prey on, have been driven to suicide. Game, Polk, Smid, Marks, Chambers, Boosey, Cooper, ex-gay leaders coming out as gay should really be a dog bites man story at this point, and yet somehow it isn't. People are still shocked to learn that a man who dedicated his life to talking other people out of being gay was really secretly trying to talk himself out of it the whole time. Pro tip, anyone who tries to talk you out of being gay is actually trying to talk himself out of being gay and not having any more success with himself than he's having with you. But, this just in, the Washington Post reports that the ex-gay Christianity movement is making a comeback. Some prominent Christians are quietly trying to resurrect ex-gay Christianity, and the new incarnation is hipper and perhaps more evolved. Yet beneath the cosmetic tweaks sits the same message that has damaged many lives over many decades. You see, the new ex-gay movement isn't about being ex-gay. It's not about converting anyone from homosexuality to heterosexuality. They've tried that and failed again and again, and no one is buying that anymore. So they're evolving away from that. The old ex-gay movement put up billboards that said, "Change is possible." The new ex-gay movement, according to the Washington Post, has a new message. Change is possible and necessary. But they're not going to try to make you straight. The new ex-gay movement isn't going to make you miserable by forcing you to pretend you're straight and happy about it. No, the new ex-gay movement is going to make you miserable by making you celibate, which they call leaving the lifestyle. The message now is you will never escape your thirst for cock or your hunger for pussy, depending on what kind of gay you are. But with the help of Jesus Christ, you can escape from love, affection, intimacy, and sex. But if you really want to be ex-gay and right with God, it's not enough to not be sucking cock. Anyone cannot be sucking cock. I am not sucking cock right now. But what matters is why you're not sucking cock. Right now, I'm not sucking cock because it's rude to talk with your mouth full. And Nancy is sitting right here. No. The new and improved ex-gay movement wants you, requires you. They want me not to suck cock for the right reason. And that right reason, that new and improved reason, is Jesus. Same as the old reason. While the Washington Post is worried about this new phase of the ex-gay movement, which really isn't that new. Gay and Christian and Celibate, the Changing Face of the Homosexuality Debate, Religion News, 2013. Is Celibacy the New Ex-Gay Ministry, HuffPo, 2014. Gay Celibacy is the New Ex-Gay Therapy, The Daily Beast, 2015. This is not new. But while the Washington Post is worried about this not-so-new phase of the ex-gay movement, I'm really not. I'm annoyed by it. I think it's idiotic. I think it's harmful. But Christians have been pushing this celibacy shit on the gays and on the straights right at the start of Christianity for thousands of years to little or no success. I would like to introduce into evidence the Catholic Church. So I'm not really worried because sex wins. Sex always wins. Sex is more powerful than we are, and it's certainly more powerful than our imaginary friends. With sex, you can't pretend that what is isn't and what isn't is. Alan Chambers, John Polk, McCrae Game, they all tried to pretend. They fooled their followers, and they harmed their followers, but in the end, they couldn't fool their own dicks. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and a long conversation with a male unicorn. And on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, Orna Goralnik joins us, the therapist on Showtime's new Couples Therapy. Check out the rave review in the New York Times. And Anna Waters from The Atlantic joins us to talk all things dental dams. That is on the Magnum that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. But there is plenty on the micro this week, too. All of it is coming at you on today's show in just a minute. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan. I'm a cisgendered 27-year-old woman from Australia. I'm in a very happy relationship with my boyfriend, but in the first 6 months or so, we had very, very regular sex. In, you know, we live apart, but 4, 5, 6 times a week. Ever since it's gotten a little bit more serious, we're reaching up that year point, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for a 27 and a 30-year-old, it seems pretty serious. We spend a lot of time together. We go to weddings, etc. We cannot have physical sex to completion, and that hasn't happened for about 3 months. I can go down on him till he finishes. I can touch his, you know, and give him a hand job, and it will work. But it just is not happening, and he says it's a mental block that he can't, I guess, you know, complete while we have intercourse. I wonder if the actual reason is his, you know, trepidation and feeling like he's put a lot of trust in me, or if there really can be like an emotional holdback of, is this him holding back in our relationship? When it was more casual and early, could he have sex with me and come? Or is it going on to a point where he considers me a serious partner with my vicious parents, etc.? And he feels like he can't come in me, I guess, or can't have sex to completion for some reason. Have I become the Madonna when I used to be the whore?
You do have physical sex to completion. He is able to ejaculate from oral sex and hand jobs. PIV is obviously important to you, and you attached a lot of meaning to penetrative vaginal intercourse. And maybe penetrative vaginal intercourse has a lot of meaning for him. And as the stakes rose in your relationship, as it became more intimate, more long-term, as he began imagining a future with you, suddenly he can't come during PIV and he needs other forms of stimulation. Could be that, but you haven't been with this guy for a year yet. And somewhere around the 6-month mark, this problem began, his difficulty with ejaculating during PIV began. And I sit here asking myself, what's the likelier explanation? He was able to come inside you during PIV without a problem for 6 months. And then when he caught feelings for you, he suddenly couldn't come inside you anymore during PIV, but he could still come from handjobs and blowjobs. Or did he start taking medication? Is he taking an antidepressant? Did he start taking an antidepressant and not tell you about it? Did he start taking erectile dysfunction medications without telling you about it? 6 months in, he may not feel comfortable enough with you emotionally to share all of his medical info with you. He may be embarrassed if he felt he had to go on antidepressants or go back on antidepressants, didn't share that with you right away. Or if he began to have erection problems, he went on ED meds and didn't tell you about it because he was embarrassed. And ED meds and antidepressants can interfere with a guy's ability to come. But all we can do is sort of kick theories around. The only person who knows the answer to this question is him. And if it's a psychological thing, he may not be able to articulate the reasons why he's suddenly having this issue. So I would encourage you to communicate with your partner, to ask him what might be going on here, to emphasize to him the importance to you of him ejaculating during PIV intercourse and the intimacy of that and the closeness of that, and you miss it, while also at the same time, it's possible to do this at the same time, emphasizing that you're happy to blow him, happy to give him hand jobs, happy to get fucked without him coming, and then pivot to hand jobs or blowjobs when he wants to get off, that you can roll with this for now. But you'd like to figure this out and get back to where you were at the start of the relationship, where he could come inside you during PIV and also come in your mouth during oral, come in your hand, if you're going to give him a hand job. And you don't mind oral and hand jobs in the mix, but you don't want PIV to climax, to drop out of the mix forever. Madonna whore complexes are real things for straight guys. And some straight guys find it easier to respond sexually with someone that they aren't emotionally invested in, someone they haven't put up on a pedestal, someone that they can feel down and dirty about without feeling conflicted about feeling down and dirty about that person. And it takes a certain degree of emotional security and dexterity to honor and love someone and get down and dirty with that person, to see them as both at once, Madonna and whore, not one or the other. And if that is indeed his problem, that's something that you two can discuss, but it's also something he may need to unpack with a shrink.
Hi, Dan. I am a woman living in the Midwest in my mid-30s, happily married. We have an amazing sex life, no issues there. Recently, there was one thing I kept from him, which is a little kink of mine, which I'm a plus-size woman. He loves my body, never had any issues with that, and I feel great about my body. But a kink I have is the feederism, which is, you know, being fed. I've watched a lot of porn about it and belly play, things like that. It was something, you know, we're very open, but that was something I always kept to myself. Not too long ago, he found some porn I was watching on my phone. Wasn't really hidden. He brought it up to me, no shaming, and kind of just asked if we, you know, did I want to try it? And first I was embarrassed because it was something I kept to myself. And I said, yeah, I want to try it. Something I've been into for years and never actually tried. So we did it the first time and it felt kind of awkward, didn't really get into it. And we've tried it a few times since and I'm still just not getting the full pleasure from it. And I don't know if it's because I know it's not particularly his kink, even though he's willing to do it, or I'm still feeling some shame for some reason. But by myself and looking at porn, everything else,
I get into it. I fantasize about it. What do I do with that? How can I, you know, bring this kink to life and do it with someone who is willing to do it with me and open and have fun with it? Or, you know, should I just say this is something that I do by myself and not something we bring into the bedroom?
You've never done this with anyone before, which means all of your past experiences with your feeder kink have been fantasy. You've watched pornography, which is edited, idealized, or you've leaned back in your chair, maybe read stories and masturbated, and everything in a fantasy, everything in a literotica story, everything on porn is kind of perfect, and it kind of hits all those marks without any awkwardness. In real life, realizing your kinks with another human being, living out your fantasies, pulling them together, putting it together, there are going to be moments of awkwardness, and you need to power through those. You need to not be derailed by those moments of awkwardness. And that can take some getting used to, especially if you fantasized about something forever, masturbated about something forever, and then you're doing that thing with a human being, and there isn't an editor there clipping out the awkward parts. And the two of you kind of have to laugh and get past the awkward parts and then dive back into the fantasy. And that is an act of will, requires some suspension of disbelief to get there, but it's worth it to get there. All that said, some people have fantasies that when they live them out or attempt to live them out, they find that this thing, whatever it is, and for whatever reason, they enjoy it more as a fantasy and they may want to reserve it for fantasy play, for private time, masturbation time, watching porn time. And that is legitimate. And it takes some exploration often for people to come to that determination. Another thing that is true for many kinksters is that their desire is reactive, as they say, that your enjoyment of your kink, whatever it is, requires the yin yang of someone else's enjoyment of the flip side of enacting that fantasy scenario. Knowing you're with someone who is maybe going through the motions for you to please you drains the experience of the erotic tension that turns you on. Now, you can make that work. That's a bit of awkwardness. That's something you can get past. It requires a little bit of the suspension of disbelief. And you have to allow for the potential of your partner, if you continue to explore this thing, to really catch a groove, to find something in your kink that speaks to them. And in a sense, it becomes their kink too. But that takes time. You say you've only done this a handful of times, a few times. Awkward the first time, not great the second or third time. Who couldn't say that about vanilla sex? Who couldn't say that just about plain old regular intercourse? Awkward the first time, awkward another time after that, the time after that, the first few times, kind of awkward because you hadn't caught a groove yet with the partner that you were with, if it was the same person each time, because you hadn't figured out how to be in the moment. You hadn't figured out how to communicate what your desires were and how to bring your partner into that world. I think when it comes to something as complicated as a kink, like feeder, gainer, that it may take a little more time for you to catch that groove, for you to communicate with your partner in an effective way, for you to get past the awkwardness that's sort of built into all new experiences, particularly new sexual experiences, and arrive at that place where you can relax into your fantasy in the same way that you've been able to relax into that fantasy watching porn or reading about feeder gainer scenes. So I wouldn't give up on partnered feeder gainer play just yet if it turns you on and your partner is willing to go there. And don't let kink shame overwhelm you in the moment where you feel like this person who's indulging me, this person who's doing this for me is only pretending, that they're secretly, silently judging me. What you have to do instead is tap into their pleasure in giving you pleasure. Even if whatever it is that you're doing isn't their thing and it's not something they would want to do with somebody else, it's legitimate that they want to do this with you. And they're turned on, not necessarily by it, but by the bank shot. They're turned on by how much it, whatever it is, turns you on. And that is a perfectly valid form of arousal. And if you just buy into that and believe it, you can go there with the vanilla partner who's indulging you. Cooking can be fun. Cooking your own meals at home saves you money and it can be healthier to cook at home. We all know this. But there's another reason, kind of a pettier reason, to cook fabulous meals at home. And that's to jump on social media and make other people jealous. And with Blue Apron, your dinner guests and your followers on Instagram will writhe with envy and jealousy when they see the amazing meals that you are making at home. Blue Apron offers three flexible plans, the two-person plan, the four-person family plan, and the WW freestyle plan. Choose from a variety of chef-designed recipes and get perfectly portioned ingredients delivered right to your door. I never cooked until Blue Apron came along, and I actually love cooking now. Blue Apron made me cook, made me a cook. Blue Apron exposed me to delicious recipes I wouldn't have thought to try. And with Blue Apron, the hard parts, the shopping and the portion control, all of that is done for me. Because of my hectic schedule, I felt like I had no other choice than to go out to eat more than I should. But with Blue Apron, I actually have time to cook a delicious, wholesome meal instead of relying on takeout. And because we go with the four-person family plan, there's always delicious leftovers in the fridge for the next day. Blue Apron's menus, carefully designed and tested by their test kitchen chefs. Their test kitchen uses unique specialty ingredients to bring chef-quality recipes to your dinner table. Blue Apron chef design recipes include amazing specialty sauces and premium ingredient blends that would be otherwise difficult, expensive, or time-consuming for you to source or make on your own. Listen to what's coming up in their menu options for September: orange and sweet chili chicken with rice cakes and vegetables, and Sicilian cauliflower stromboli with hot honey and tomato dipping sauce. Don't you dare try to tell me you would make that at home without Blue Apron. You liars, you would not. I could not, but with Blue Apron, we all can. To start making delicious, brag-worthy meals at home without the hassle, try Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off when you visit blueapron.com/savage. That's blueapron.com/savage for $60 off. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 20-something-year-old, bi male, living in a large metropolitan area in the Midwest. And the other night, I was out at a bar, hanging out with a bunch of friends from back in the day. And when it got towards the end of the night, I was talking with a high school friend's wife, and she invited me back to spend the night with them too. And we went over because I wanted to talk to like the high school friend and with her. And so he was down and he wanted me to come over. So we left the bar soon after that. And while we were on the way and even at the bar, we didn't really talk about like what was actually going to happen or what they wanted to do. So then when we got there, she went into her bedroom and was saying, like, I'm going to get ready. And then him and I just had a drink and kind of talked about, like, what he was into. And we made out a little bit. And he then went in to check in on her and came out and said, like, oh, yeah, she just needs a little bit more time. Made out some more. And then that kind of just happened over and over again. He kind of, like, groped me a bit. But it was getting really late, so I said, like, yo, I just, like, kind of need to go to bed. And nothing really more than that happened. So the next day, he texted me later in the night, or later in the day, I should say, and was like, hey, you know, sorry, she's really tired and felt, like, a little too drunk. We'd really love to have you over again. And I said, like, yeah, sure, that sounds great. Like, let's find a time. And my question and, like, the advice I'm seeking is, what type of communication should I have with them before we like kind of like go into their house again or go to a bedroom together? You know, should we like meet up at a bar beforehand and kind of talk things through? I just feel like, you know, I want to be respectful of their couple's relationship. And I think this is like one of their first times doing it. I'm not weirded out by what happened, like, you know, getting too drunk, having the best of us, but yeah, this is also my first time kind of like hooking up with a couple. I'm just looking for some advice on like what should be like the sequence of events.
So how well do you know this friend from high school? These people aren't unknown to you, right? They're familiar to you.
Yeah, they're familiar to me. I was playing on a pool league with the guy for a while. And I met the wife through him.
Usually the advice about meeting up in advance is when people are strangers. You know, you want to meet in a public place. You want to get a sense for them as people. You want to make sure you have their real information. If your gut tells you that they're dangerous or they just feel off, then you don't go somewhere private with them. And you meet at a time when you can't go away. You know, you meet at 4 o'clock on a day when you have, 5 o'clock right after work when you have dinner plans with somebody else. But since these are old friends and you know them socially and you already have an established rapport and you know they're not serial killers, I think you're fine
right.
for your next date just to be heading over to their place.
Gotcha. Thanks for the advice. Yeah, that makes sense. And that seems reasonable.
And obviously you don't want to go out for drinks again because it sounds like alcohol is what derailed that first opportunity.
Yeah. Or maybe just a drink to something, but yeah, definitely not staying out all night again.
Maybe a drink, but sometimes when people are nervous, particularly if they're doing something sexually they haven't done before, a drink doesn't stay a drink. It becomes drinks.
Yeah, you're right.
And so just to be in a place where there are no drinks or there's just a six-pack
sure.
of beer, so there's no more than two drinks apiece possible, I think is a good idea. You know, some people will listen to, you know, your depiction of the events of that evening and wonder if it wasn't a bait and switch, if it wasn't about getting you there for him. And I don't think that's the case, because if it was a bait and switch, he would have pressed you to do more than just make out and grope a little bit while you mm-hmm. waited for her. I think the fact that he mm-hmm. left the room, found out that she was indisposed, which happens when people drink and stay out late and go home. They think they've got the energy, they can do it, and then they realize they can't. It seems legit. You know, he didn't press you to keep going without her. He said, you know what, tonight's off. Thank you for coming over. Let's try to reschedule.
Yeah.
And
So maybe like at dinner or something like that.
Yeah, and that makes me feel like there was no shady intentions here, and they weren't being manipulative. All that said, you do need some clarity before you have a three-way about, you know, especially when you're the very special guest star, and about what's expected of you. And you can be clear about what you'd like to experience too. But, you know, I hate to make these things hierarchical, but the couple is kind of the priority. Like the very special guest star has mm-hmm. to be comfortable. The very special guest star can, you know, want to have vaginal intercourse with some other guy's girlfriend. But if that's something they want to reserve just for them, then that might be off the menu. And if that's not okay with you, then you're not the right very special guest star for them. But if it is okay with you, then it can be. And you need to have that conversation in advance, so everyone's on the same page about expectations. And then stick to what's mm-hmm. on the list. Don't start to improvise, especially as the very special guest star. Don't try to go for something that you know that they ruled out or reopen negotiations about it. Absolutely don't try to like make a move when you know that move isn't welcome and it's already been ruled out, because that's a violation of consent. But even to say, you know, now that we're hot and heavy and rolling around, can we revisit this me fucking your girlfriend issue? Like, that's not okay. You have to stick to the script, and so did they.
Yeah.
But you can't stick to a script that you guys haven't written and agreed to. And so you need to agree to at least the bare outlines. You know, you don't want to script every beat, every moment, every touch, you know, every tongue, because, you know, you want some room for play and rolling around. But the broad outlines, who's going to do what to who, what they're up for, what they want to experience, what you want to experience, all of that should be articulated in advance. And that doesn't have to be a clinical legal discussion. That can be a sexy kind of dirty talk convo. And if it's easier to do via text, start a group text and do it via text. Some people find that draws them out in a way where a face-to-face conversation, at least initially, is harder for them, that they can state their needs clearly on text, and then it makes it easier for them to state their needs clearly face to face after they've already put it out there via text. So that's also an option.
Yeah, that feels like a good first step to at least get the conversation going, like sending a text that says, hey, it was really fun last time. I want to meet up again, but maybe we should get some boundaries in place before we meet up.
And not in a bar and not too late at night.
Yeah.
And the pro tip I give all the time when it comes to three ways, and just something that I would throw out to this couple, if I were in your shoes and I was more experienced with three ways, is all three ways become two ways once in a while. There's always like a pivot where suddenly it's two people who are, you know, on each other or focused on each other for a second. Is that okay? If it's not okay, how do we control for that when it happens? So that everyone is empowered, if they're uncomfortable in the moment, to speak up. Usually more of a problem for the couple. You know, if you're suddenly, you know, connecting with his girlfriend in a way where he feels outside of it, you don't want him to begin to stew or get angry or weird. You want him to say, hey, you guys, pull me back into this so I don't begin to stew or feel awkward or weird, and then pull him back in. Same with you, same with her. Although it's usually not the third who gets to say, hey, you guys are leaving me out for a little bit. The third usually is expected to be, and often is without any thought, gracious about that. Because the emotional stakes are much higher for the couple who's inviting a third in when one half of the couple splits off for a second or 3 minutes and it becomes a two-way with the guest. That's more emotionally tricky for the couple than it is for the third to suddenly be on the out.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks
but
for that.
You're welcome. But I don't think that this is a problem. I think this is potentially really hot and sexy and awesome and Yahtzee for you. Congrats.
Yeah. Go for it. Thanks.
Go for cool. it earlier in the evening and with less alcohol.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan, Dan. Thanks for the advice.
You're welcome.
And the call.
You're welcome. Have fun. Have you heard of hygge, the Scandinavian concept of extreme coziness? Well, fall is upon us, and it is time to hygge up your world with a MeUndies onesie. MeUndies makes the softest undergarments in the world, and they're the best way to face the cooler weather. MeUndies are designed to be the softest thing you've ever put on your body, and with a onesie, you can put it all over your body. MeUndies are available in sizes from extra small to 4XL, and MeUndies just introduced 5 new silhouettes with the Feel Free collection for women, designed with every body type in mind and a feather-light waistband for you to feel free. Undie exhaustion, be gone. New prints drop every Tuesday, so you'll never run out of ways to express yourself in your underpants. Plus, members get an exclusive print at the beginning of every month. The prints are fun and all, but they also offer classic colors and don't always play by the rules. MeUndies just launched some new whites for wearing, oh my God, after Labor Day. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, especially because they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get your 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, a 30-year-old bisexual female calling from Europe. I've got a kind of a twofold question for you. I've been dating my boyfriend for 4 years. We're happy, but the sex has slowed a lot. It used to be the best sex of my life. And we've tried to spice it up, but it hasn't really been working out that well for us. So I have a friend who I knew from a job I used to work. We used to work together, and we meet up every few months and we go for a drink, we have a laugh, and I'm not that attracted to her. But the last time we went for a drink, she told me that she is attracted to me and that she'd like to have a threesome with me and my boyfriend. So as I said, I'm not that attracted to her. I ran it by my boyfriend and he seems to be up for it. So considering that we have been having trouble kind of spicing up our sex life, is it something do you think we should go for? And if not, do you have any advice on how to revive a sex life that was incredible, the best, and has just become too familiar?
My first impulse is to tell you not to have this three-way. You're not attracted to this woman. You're not attracted to this friend who proposed having a three-way with you and your boyfriend. And isn't that a recipe for disaster? Well, potentially. Potentially that is indeed a recipe for disaster. However, most couples who have three-ways, who are straight, they're having that three-way with a person that half the couple isn't necessarily attracted to. They're attracted to the circumstance, the situation, the three-way is hot. But if it's a female-female-male three-way and the female in the couple is straight, she's not going to be attracted to the other woman. And yet lots of people have made that scenario work. On the flip side too, where there's a straight guy in the couple and they have another straight guy or bi guy round, And he's not into the guy, but he's into the three-way, and he's into how this guy is into his girlfriend, or his girlfriend is so into it, he's willing to go there for her. So, yeah, this can work. But I think in this instance, where the person that you're thinking about as your potential third has expressed not just an interest in having a three-way, or you just weren't thinking about having a three-way with her, and your boyfriend is attracted to her, and she's attracted to your boyfriend, she's attracted to you. She put that out there. She led with that. So the odds that if you went to bed with her, it would become clear to her during the interaction that you weren't into her in the same way that she was into you, or as receptive of her attention as she hoped you might be, are really high. And she could wind up with hurt feelings. And those hurt feelings could derail that three-way that you were hoping would revive your sexual connection with your boyfriend. So yeah, to a three-way, but maybe a three-way with someone else. Or maybe a two-way with your boyfriend. She hit on you first. You could say to her, I'm not really interested in you in that same way, but you know what? If you're into my boyfriend, and you've already established that your boyfriend's into her, my boyfriend's into you, and it would be hot for me to know you guys were fucking, or to think about it, or to hear about it before or after. So you could offer your boyfriend up on a platter if that turns you on. A lot of people find when they open their relationship that they're not just excited about the sex that they're suddenly able to have with other people, but they often become excited again about the sex that they can have with their partners. That is so often true. It's practically a cliche that a couple's sex life was dead. They opened it to outside sexual partners because both of them had to get it somewhere. And suddenly, and to the surprise of the couple, they were fucking each other again. They were excited about each other again. I think because they look at each other now through fresh eyes and see what makes them attractive to others and that revives their attraction to their partner. Now, leaving this woman and this particular threesome aside, and she's not the only woman in the world that you could have a threesome with, or the only person in the world you could have a threesome with, reviving your sex life with your partner. It was the best. Now it's, you said it, too familiar. You guys are always going to be this familiar to each other. Indeed, you guys are going to become more and more familiar to each other over time. So you have to mix it up. You have to fight boredom. You have to make unfamiliar what it is in your power to make unfamiliar. And that can be the stuff that you guys are doing with each other. You can try new things. You can try new sex toys. That can be the places where you guys are doing each other. Get out of your apartment. Get out of his apartment. Get out of the same old bed. Don't have it at the same time of day. Just make a conscious effort to blow it all up, to put limits, to say, you know what? No more sex in my apartment. No more sex in your apartment. No more sex in our beds. This position that has been our default for so long, it is off the menu. We're not going to do that. Or maybe, and this is advice I've given a lot of opposite sex couples, and I've heard positive things back from those opposite sex couples, take PIV off the menu. PIV is often a default for heterosexual couples in a way that PIA is not necessarily a default for gay couples. Mix it up. Get creative. But to get creative when you're in a deep groove as a couple requires intent, and it requires effort and buy-in. And that buy-in and that effort can be from a place of not despair, but a place of excitement about the adventure that you two are going to link arms and go on together. Now, you were his adventure when you first got together. He was your adventure when you first got together. You want it to be exciting again? You two together have to go on new adventures. This woman who hit on you, that could be an adventure. Maybe an adventure that you want your boyfriend to have with her without you there. Or maybe it can be one of those three ways where you're not necessarily into the other person. That can work. Worry about her getting her feelings hurt. Or if just three ways are what she put into your head, oh my God, get out there. Find someone else that you could potentially have a three-way with. Three ways aren't the only way to mix it up. It's not the only adventure that you guys could go on together, but it's a good place to start. Do you have time to go to the post office? No, you do not have time to go to the post office. Are you busy? Yes, you are. Going to the post office is a real but avoidable hassle, and you can avoid it with Stamps.com, one of the most popular time-saving tools out there for small businesses. Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office and saves you money with discounts you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Post Office right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. Once your mail is ready, you just hand it to your mail carrier or drop it in a mailbox. It is that simple. With Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com is the way to go, saving you time and money. It's no wonder over 700,000 small businesses are already using Stamps.com. And right now, my listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. I have a question about the Clone a Willy family of products, specifically the etiquette involved in soliciting a Willy clone. For context, I am a gay trans man. I've been dating a cis pan guy for about four and a half months, and he's really great, and I have a lot of fun with him, and he has the most majestic cock that I've ever laid my mouth on. So I am thinking about asking to use the Clone a Willy kit to make a dildo version. I think it'd be fun. There's a lot of really cool things I can think of to do with it, but I'm wondering whether 4 months is too early to start talking about cloning people's genitals. And then to complicate things, we're both non-monogamous. I've talked to my primary partner about the idea, and they decided that, like, if I do get a clone of this guy's cock, they'd rather not see it at all. My two partners are friends, and it feels to my primary like a breach of boundaries to know what my secondary's cock looks like without him being, you know, active in that decision. Meanwhile, the guy that I'm dating has a wife and a girlfriend, and if I end up with a clone, do they have the right to know? Do they have the right to not know? I don't know whether this is a boundary that could need discussion for those relationships or something that maybe falls under reasonable expectations of privacy. There's no protocol here, so I just kind of wanted to hear what your instincts are.
Yeah, the pages in Emily Post that cover the etiquette of cloning someone's cock, of making a dildo of someone's cock, they're blank. There's no guidance. Your primary partner is uncomfortable with seeing this dildo, not uncomfortable with the existence of this dildo, because they're friends with the person that you're dating, this lovely, hung, cis, pan guy. Perfectly understandable. The only other person whose opinion should concern you is the guy that you're dating. And if you're having a fun, sexually adventurous relationship with this guy and you'd like to make a dildo of his dick, that's just something you can toss out there. And if 4.5 months is too soon for him to contemplate dick cloning, then he'll tell you that. As for his wife, his girlfriend, those are his relationships to manage. I can't imagine, however, that someone who is pan and poly, who has a wife and a girlfriend and is dating a guy, that they're so possessive of his magnificent cock that they would take issue with him making a dildo and gifting the guy he's seeing right now with that dildo. But if they do have an issue with it, those are his relationships to worry about, his relationships to manage. The relationship you need to worry about primarily is your relationship with your primary partner, and you've managed that. Now you can just toss it out there to this guy, see how he feels about it. And if he wants to raise the subject at home during a meeting of the entire extended polycule pan family, that's on him.
Hey, Dan. Gay guy in New York City here. I recently just saw a new therapist, and I went to my first meeting with him, and he is so hot. He's an openly gay man, LGBTQ-affirming therapist, and he's literally the most beautiful man I've ever seen. I took it as an exercise of talking to hot people that intimidate me. But at the same time, he's so hot. Is this a conflict of interest? Is this anything I will ever have to tell him? Should I just treat this as a little gift I'm not sure what to do. But he's so hot. And I don't think I can tell him that because he's my therapist.
He's not your therapist yet. You had one appointment with him. That's kind of like a first date. You don't have to commit on the first date. If he's so hot that you can't open up to him, that you can't talk about whatever it is you wanted to see a therapist to talk about because you're too busy flirting with him or Potemkin villaging yourself, trying to present the best possible version of yourself to make yourself more attractive to him, because in the reptile part of your brain, or even in the non-reptile part of your brain, you're fantasizing about having a sexual relationship or a relationship with this guy, might not be the best therapist for you then. That could really complicate the therapeutic relationship. If you're interested in seeing him, if he's your only option or he's the best option, and besides the hotness, you're really connected, you're going to have to be honest with him. You're going to have to tell him that this is part of what you're going through, that these thoughts are weighing on you, and you need to figure out how to set them aside so that you can have a patient-therapist relationship with him. Or perhaps if there's no way to set that aside, if it's going to complicate this relationship, then you may have to ultimately go with a different therapist. And then if he can't be your therapist, if you can't have that kind of relationship with him, who knows? Maybe you'll run into him out in a bar in a few years' time and be in a better place, and it wouldn't be quite as enormous an ethical violation if he wanted to see you and did. You could live in hope. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. More like Lilith tweets. At Fake Dan Savage, remind me how long after a breakup one is permitted to wallow and only eat ice cream. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Wallowing and eating only ice cream, you get 2 weeks for that. You get an additional 2 weeks where your breakup is all you can talk about, where you get two more weeks of wallow, a little less ice cream, maybe phase the ice cream out. And then you have to shut up about your heartbreak. You have to go out with your friends and ask them questions about their lives. And their lives will help you put your life in perspective and get on with your life. Saeed De La Cruz tweets, love you, Dan, but it is very inconsistent for you to chastise people for forcing others to partake in their sexcapades by having sex in public one day, and then turn around and insist that public sex at pride events are an inevitability the next. All right, you have sex in a park at some random time of day or on the subway. That's not fair to people who might just be there to enjoy the park or just trying to get to work. You go to Pride, and you go to the Pride Parade, which is a celebration of sexual diversity, sexual expression, sexual freedom. You may encounter some of that sexual diversity and some of that sexual expression that you went to Pride to celebrate. The distinction I'm trying to make is between spaces and places where you have a reasonable expectation there will not be public sexual activity, and of course, something like Pride, where it is reasonable to expect you may encounter some sexual activity or sexual expression. You always have the option of turning around and marching in the other direction when that happens. And finally, Suleiman Akeni tweets, after listening to 100 of the most recent episodes of Hashtag Savage Lovecast, I've gone back and I am now listening to the very first episodes, and it is so trippy to hear Dan refer to Terry as his boyfriend. For some reason, I thought they'd been married since the beginning of time. Sometimes feels that way, especially to us, but marriage equality only came to the United States in 2015. We have been married here as long as we could be, and we will stay married for as long as we possibly can, but it hasn't been since the beginning of time. All right, if you want me to read one of your tweets on a future episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, I just had to stop in the middle of episode 671 and tell you that you and Paul Sullivan are 100% completely wrong about finances. I've been married for almost 25 years. My husband and I have always kept our money separate, and we have pooled money based on who earns more into a common fund to pay for things. And this has reduced stress around money, reduced arguments, and engaged us in much greater intimacy. This idea that magically having a pool of money that we all take means that people have to talk about things, no, people can just dip into the money and spend it at will. If you have to put in certain amounts of money in order to accomplish something like the infamous new couch you mentioned, They have to agree on how much to spend and then on what to do. Trust me, it works beautifully. And one other thing, let's be aware that men hold most of the power and most of the money in this country, and that even when they don't make more than their wives, they often hold more political and social power. And so asking a woman to hand over her money into a giant pool when she makes more than he does is really asking for her to submit to the patriarchal unfairness and let him have access to things he hasn't earned. No. Have separate money, do a joint account for household expenses. It will make your life better. End of story. Thank you.
Hi, this comment is in regard to the woman who wanted to know how to feel good about having degrading yet also casual sex. I thought Dan's advice was really great, spot on, especially the part about the aftercare. The only thing I'd like to add is that aftercare is for tops too. Tops need to know that what they did was consensual and that you feel good about it so that they can feel good about what they did too.
Hey, Dan. My wife and I listened to your last podcast and just had a response to the woman that was so tragically hurt about her outie vagina. We had never heard of this. We're both 50 years old. My entire life, I've seen a lot of vaginas. I've never heard of this thing. Perhaps it's a regional concept. I've seen a lot of pussy in porn and seen large labia minora, small labia minora. I rather love seeing large lips. And I just felt terrible for this woman, but this isn't a real thing, or at least I hope it's not a real thing, that anybody would feel this way. Talk to some people. You're going to feel a lot better. This is completely normal and pretty desirable to an awful lot of the population.
All right, we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, even better, you can record your question on your phone and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Keep to 3 minutes or less, please, and be sure to include a phone number if you want me to give you a call back. If you like my political rants at the top of the show, you want to listen to me every week or almost every week on Blabbermouth, the News of the Week podcast hosted by Eli Sanders, myself, and some of the other smart writers here at The Stranger in Seattle, Blabbermouth, every Wednesday. And if you really can't get enough of me running my mouth and you're in Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Toronto, or Boston, Savage Love Live is coming to all of those cities in the fall. Tickets are available at savagelovecast.com/events. And my Dirty Little Porn Film Festival Hump is also on the road, coming this weekend, Kansas City, Portland, Maine, in Victoria, British Columbia. Head over to humpfilmfest.com/tour to get your tickets. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Orna Goralnik on Twitter at Orna Goralnik. And follow Anna Waters on Twitter at Anna Waters, but spell Waters with a Z. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.